You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News. And today, first of all, it is July 6th. The moratorium is over. Signings can become official. Perhaps you will hear the Pacers' official signing of Jalen Smith in due time. Perhaps not, depending on order of operations and things like that. But signings will be made official around the league in due time. But what also happened today, TJ Warren, Edmund Sumner, leave the Pacers. They depart for Brooklyn in free agency. We'll talk about that, what those deals could mean for the Pacers, or what they signal, really, I think is more important here, about the Pacers. And then John Corrales from Locked On Celtics will join us to talk more about the Brogdon trade, what the motivations were for both sides, what the Pacers can expect from Nesmith and Daniel Theis to a lesser extent. Let's jump in with the big news, though. Of course, one day after I talk about TJ Warren's free agency outlook, boom, he picks a team. He's headed to Brooklyn. Not 30 minutes later, Edmund Sumner agrees to a deal with Brooklyn. Two more guys out of the Pacers free agency ecosystem. That's basically everybody. If you don't count Gabe York and Nate Hinton, because they're coming off of two ways, TJ Warren's now picked his team. O'Shea Brissett is on a team. Ricky Rubio has picked his team. Jalen Smith has picked his team. Just Lance left for the Pacers out there in the free agency ecosystem. Now, we'll start with Sumner just because it's shorter and sweeter and to the point. Sumner was actually traded to the Nets by the Pacers last season in a salary and roster cutting move so they could bring in Brad Wanamaker after they needed point guard depth. And in retrospect, that did not work out. But that means Sumner was not officially a free agent from the Pacers. He was actually a free agent from really no team. The Nets waived him, but the Nets more specifically. The Nets signed him to a deal. They don't get any rights from that because they cut him, but he was not technically in the Pacers' sphere. They can't do a sign-and-trade. They can't do anything from that because they made that trade. And look, Sumner, I get, he rehabbed in the Pacers' facility a lot last year. I saw him all the time when we'd walk in there for various things. He was around Indy frequently. You know, he would train with Joey Burton, a local trainer, quite often on his recovery. He's doing a lot better. You can read more about that in Fieldhouse Files from Scott Agnes, who did a one-on-one interview with Sumner recently. But it didn't really make sense for him to rejoin the Pacers, not because of his age. He's still sort of in their age range at 26, and he's still good. They just have so many guards. He would not have played on this Pacers team. And that is the crux of this decision to not bring him back, is just that there's no minutes for him. And I'm sure he, a guy who, and as we'll talk about Warren similarly, is attempting to reshape his value and get back into, hey, I belong in the league kind of spots, joining a Nets team in flux where he can play every game and be in the rotation. Is a good fit, assuming that they end up where he can play in the rotation. It's a good fit for him. Bigger market, big coverage, an opportunity to get your name out there with those big games. That's a good a landing spot for him to be able to grow more as a player and be able to become the next guy. So it doesn't affect the Pacers at all since he wasn't a free agent from that team. But Edmund Sumner now at Brooklyn. Now let's talk about TJ Warren. Much, much more significant, obviously. One-year deal. Stunning for me to hear one-year deal for TJ Warren. I thought for sure he would get a complicated two- or three-year deal with some funky options on the back end. A lot of other podcasts I listened to discussing free agency said something similar. TJ Warren says, nah, I'm doing the prove-it deal. I'm going to Brooklyn to prove it and rehab my value and show what I can do. And like Sumner, a perfect landing spot Brooklyn is for him because there's a lot of coverage of that Nets team. So if you play well there, you will be well covered. Your stats will be well documented. People will know how well you're doing. You will also, if you're TJ Warren, play a lot on that team. Kevin Durant looking like he's going to be traded. Who knows what will actually happen. They don't have a lot of other forwards or wings. He could start day one for that team. Or he could be their sixth man. Either way, he'll play a lot. So it makes sense why he decided to go there. Now, to be straight up about this, the Pacers could have beat this offer. Every team could have beat this offer. It was a one-year deal. Usually when things get reported, by the way, by insiders as just has agreed to a one-year deal with no money, it's usually a minimum deal. So I saw that, and I was a little surprised. I was like, there's no way TJ Warren signed a minimum deal. But Strom's reported late in the night, I believe it was on Hoops Hype podcast, that it is a minimum deal. TJ Warren signed a minimum one-year contract. Stunning to me, if Strom's reporting is correct, which he is all over this stuff, so I'm sure it is, that he got that low of value. But if he wants to go to the right place to rehab his value, right place to get his next contract and set up his career, I suppose that makes sense. It's a good fit for him, certainly. The money, though, I am stunned that he took the minimum. And maybe no one else was offering more because the Pacers could have easily beat that. And another thought I had when I heard it was the minimum was, if he signs a minimum contract with the Pacers for 1 year, next summer they have his full bird rights. And then they can pay him a bunch of money that other teams can't. Whereas with Brooklyn, he will not have full bird rights next summer. He'll have non-bird rights. So he must love the fit. He must love the opportunity he's going to have there as a way for him to grow as a player and rehab from this 71 games and two calendar year stretch that he's on. Three calendar year stretch that he's on. But we'll see. I think that's an interesting fit. So unlike Ricky Rubio, who I did a whole segment on earlier this week on how the Pacers could still, in theory, if they wanted, fold that into a sign and trade with Cleveland, this one is a little less interesting. Much more straightforward here. The Pacers cannot make Warren a sign and trade with the Nets. Here's why. It's not because they can't sign and trade Warren at all. There are other teams they could sign and trade TJ Warren too, but the Brooklyn Nets are very expensive. Ben Simmons makes a lot of money. Joe Harris makes a lot of money. Royce O'Neal makes a lot of money for them. Seth Curry does as well. Patty Mills signed for big money. Nick Claxton signed for big money. Oh, by the way, they have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They're going to trade those guys, but assuming they don't just trade them for nothing in exchange, which would be stupid, they have to take back at least something like $64 million in return for both of them. The Nets are way over the hard cap already, even before they technically sign Warren. So they can't take a player in the sign-and-trade because if you do, you become hard-capped at the apron. You can't spend above that amount. The Nets have already spent above that amount, so they cannot be hard-capped under any circumstance, which means that if they take a player in a sign-and-trade, then they have to cut a ton of money from their team, which is just not possible. So all that to say, this cannot be a sign-and-trade. The Pacers cannot – on a minimum deal, there's no point anyway, but the Pacers cannot – use their bird rights to send Warren to Brooklyn to get stuff back unless the Nets cut a ton of money in the next couple days, which seems extremely unlikely given what their current goals would be as an organization and as a franchise. So Warren's just gone from the Pacers. This actually is interesting. Now his cap holds off the Pacers' books. They are closer to at least becoming a cap space team. If they can't find a sign and trade with the Cavs, the Pacers will certainly be a cap space team. Say goodbye to those trade exceptions. Everything's a lot easier to mathematize when you're under the cap, but there's less optionality. So perhaps that's what ends up happening. But TJ Warren to Brooklyn. Pacers, again, could have in theory beaten this offer, but if they did not want him, that's fine. And I think that there is merit to that. Look, I have said I think TJ Warren back on the Pacers makes sense. They need wings. He's a wing. He's a good wing. The organizational familiarity is good. Rehab your value on a young team. Great. No pressure situation. But I understand the Pacers, who the stat I'm going to continue to bring up, now have 12 players, 25 or under, on their team, not prioritizing a 28-year-old with an injury history, right? The injury history part, I would have understood them not prioritizing him anyway. But now that their roster is really all clumped into one age range, bringing back guys outside that range is not a priority for them. It's not like it's a hindrance. Having vets is good. McConnell's still on the team. Tice might be on the team. Buddy Hield is still on the team. There are vets who could remain on the Pacers roster. But it doesn't seem like older players are being prioritized or are thought of as necessities by this Pacers front office. And I think that makes sense given the direction they're headed, given Kevin Pritchard's comments alluring to this being a longer-term thing. You know, Rick Carlisle using the word rebuild very strongly late last season when denying the front office rumors. There are all the signs have been there that the Pacers are going younger and doing a project thing for a year or two. And every time a player who's over 25 leaves, I continue to think about that. So that's why Warren, I think, was not a priority for the Pacers. That's why he got such a cheapo deal from another team. And he cannot be signed and traded. That saga is over. TJ Warren will not be a Pacer next year, and they will not be extracting value from his contract. So let's bring in John Corrales and talk about this Brogdon-Nesmith trade, how both parties will benefit from this. Really quick, before we do that, though, I want to talk to you guys about Arcade 1UP. We've got big news. The one and only NBA Jam is back. Arcade 1UP, the leader in at-home retro arcade games, is not only bringing the best game ever back, but they've made it bigger than ever with a Shaq Edition machine and one of the first sports games ever to feature real and digitized NBA licensed teams. No fouls, no free throws, and no quarters required. You can compete with friends and family through all new Wi-Fi leaderboards, making you more connected than ever. And you can pre-order now an NBA Jam Shaq Edition console at arcade1up.com, arcade, the number one, up.com. For an estimated early September ship date, Arcade 1UP is the place for fun. They've got even more classics like Golden Tee, Mortal Kombat, and many others starting at just $3.99. Check it out, too. They're giving away one of those NBA Jam Shaq edition consoles to a Lockdown listener. Enter for a chance to win your game console for your man cave at arcade1up.com/lockdown. Arcade, the number one up.com/lockdown. You've got till July 8th to enter. Don't miss out. Enter today. Crossover time, Pacers Celtics, who made a big trade that was immediately overshadowed by Minnesota and Utah making a way, way bigger trade, but a pretty seismic deal. The champs making a big trade, adding Malcolm Brogdon. The Pacers mid-rebuild, adding some younger pieces and a first-round pick. It's not that seismic, but it would have been the biggest trade of the summer if Rudy Gobert didn't stomp all over it. I'm Tony East from Locked On Pacers. He's John Carlos from Locked On Celtics. We're going to break it all down, and let's start on the Pacers side, John, because I host the Pacers show, and I want to. So they get a pick that will be not great. And so to me, they are putting a pretty big bet on Aaron Nesmith being a useful piece of this trade. And getting a young wing sounds great, but his stats have not been great. He has not been able to get on the floor all the time for the Celtics. So what's the deal with Aaron Nesmith? I mean, he was supposed to be this awesome shooter that hasn't quite panned out. Where is his trajectory headed right now?
So I still think kind of highly of Aaron Nesmith. I think the situation in Boston kind of passed him by, where, you know, first of all, impacted by the pandemic. This is, I think, kind of been an unfair start to his career, because he was in college, and then the pandemic shut everything down for a long, long time. And then all of a sudden the draft happened, and it was show up, here's training camp. It's like 2 days long, and then boom, go. And so he never got a summer league before his rookie season. He never got a full preseason. He never got like that full opportunity to kind of say, okay, from the Celtics, this is what you need to do. This is how this is our evaluation. Go through summer league and then come back and say, oh, okay, this is okay. We're going to tweak this, tweak that, whatever, whatever. So that kind of started off his career on a bad foot. And then it never got on track. His confidence by the end was shot. And you could hear him talking about it in his exit interview. It was kind of stark in the exit interview. He was like, you know, I just need to get back to the point where, you know, my shot is back. You know, it falls in practice, it falls in, you know, workouts and all of it, but it doesn't fall in the games. And he just seemed frustrated. He seemed kind of like beaten down by the whole thing, because he is a very good athlete. He has a ton of energy. I mean, I've watched him play, and every time I watch him play, I like gasp because I think he's going to kill himself out there the way he throws himself around the floor. But he's just playing with such high energy. He's trying to do so much. So when I think with the situation in Indiana, I think it's going to kind of help him kind of relax, calm down. You know, the Pacers are in a different situation. You have time to give him 20, 30 minutes a game, and he's not going to be looking over his shoulder if a shot doesn't fall. He can go through these kind of ups and downs and not worry about, am I helping the team win? And, you know, when you bring in Ime and the team starts to turn around and the Celtics go on this run and they're looking for, like, you got to help us now. And he wasn't helping now, then sit down. You got to sit down. And that kind of pressure just that didn't work for him. So I think if there's going to be a spot where he can rediscover himself, it'd be a place like Indiana right now, where you're just in a rebuilding situation. He can get his minutes. He's not worried about shots falling or not. And I think he's got the build. I think he's got the athleticism, and he has shown the shooting. If that can come back, then yeah, I think he does have some potential to be a pretty good player.
We will definitely talk about the shooting, because that's a big part of his outlook as a trade piece at all.
Yeah.
What the Pacers are betting on, to me, besides just that they can make Nesmith better, is that they just did this. They got Jalen Smith from the Suns last season. They traded Torrey Craig to Phoenix, and they said, yeah, Jalen Smith, you know, they cut some salary in that trade. There were other benefits, but, you know, this guy hasn't been any good yet. We're not trying to win. Let's see what happens. And he was awesome for them. Yep. Awesome. 13-7 guy. Turns it around right away as soon as he's in a situation where he's not like, all right, play well or you're getting benched for Ayton and JaVale. So They have the situation in place, and they've shown it very recently that a guy in that situation can thrive. And so Neesmith, I think, will come in to have that chance again. Now, he's got to do it. Smith did it. That's why he got more money from the Pacers. That's why he's back. That's why Rick Carlisle has said out loud, I love this kid. Like, I want him back on my team. So Neesmith's got a chance to follow that similar path, which I find fascinating. And I think a lot hinges on the shot, because I remember when he came out of college being like, this dude hit over 50% of like a lot of threes his last year at Vanderbilt. Like, this dude could really shoot it. So I thought he was going to be a shooter in the NBA, and I look, and it looked like it started okay, and it hasn't been. So the big skill, will he? Do you buy that he will be a good three-point shooter in the NBA? Was last year a fluke? What's the projection on that skill?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say with any real kind of weight behind the words. Like, I think he can. He has been a shooter before. I mean, it's kind of funny that a skill like this suddenly seems to go away. But I know that shooting is so mental. It's so mental sometimes. If you can't recreate your shot, if you don't feel comfortable, I don't think people understand. Like, when you get tight and your shoulders kind of get tight and you're just not, it's not comfortable. Like, look, I've just from my own playing can tell you that when the shot goes away, it can play real games in your head. And what makes NBA players so special is being able to kind of just shoot their way through these types of slumps. The best of the best, when the shot goes away, they're like, don't worry about it. It's going to all even out, and they don't get worried about it. People who are on the fringe or not in the league and their shot goes away and they can't get past that, that's a skill that he's going to have to learn. Because I think the mechanics are there. His ability is there. You hear the people around here talk like yeah, they believe in him. There's a reason why he continues to, or has continued in the past to get a chance and then falls out of favor and then gets a chance again. So it's honestly, it's just a mental thing with him. So it's really about taking the pressure off of him and letting him just play free, get out there and shoot. I think sometimes with the Celtics, he started moving too fast, trying to do too much. Just go out there and be a basketball player again. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if when he does talk to the media, that's going to be the theme of what he says. I want to go out there and be a basketball player again is probably the overarching kind of attitude. I think he can. I mean, I always think those things can be overcome. I think he has the potential to be a good player. Star player? No, probably not. But can he go out there and hit three threes for you, two, three threes a game? I think he can become that guy.
If you can hit threes or you can defend, you will be on a team forever. Like, as long as you are able to run up and down the floor.
And I think he'll be able to do both. I think he can defend.
Yeah, I was going to say, and his defense has been okay, largely because he's athletic. His on-ball D is better than his off-ball D. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
That's correct.
So I think that will allow him to play for the Pacers. He's every bit of 6'5". Like, he can be a three. It's not perfect, but whatever. That's fine. So if the shot comes, he's very valuable. But the defense, I think, will allow him to stay on the floor. Look, I don't want to speak for the Pacers here, but I don't think Malik Fitz, Nick Stauskas, or Juwan Morgan are in their long-term plans. I think they are, as we all know, salary ballast in this deal. But Daniel Theis is a good player. There's a reason the Celtics went out on purpose to get him last year. There's a reason that the Bulls signed him away from the Celtics a few years ago. Or was that a trade? That was a trade. But he's been
on him the contract. They gave him that contract.
That's right.
Houston did.
He's been around. He's been on some good teams. I don't think he'll have a long role with the Pacers, but he's not a valueless player. Just give me the 1 minute spiel on Daniel.
Yeah, Theis is, I think, a pretty decent defender. Not strong. He's not going to go out there and give you, like, you're not going to throw him out there against Joel Embiid, but he is can be a good defender. He filled in well for the Celtics in that opening round series against Brooklyn when Robert Williams was out. So he definitely can defend. He was part of a really good defense a couple of seasons ago with the Celtics. Can pick and pop a little bit. The three-point shot looks good. It falls a couple times, and then it's just the percentage is you know, not all there. Probably a little bit better in a mid-range pick and pop, short roll type thing. But he has value. He definitely has value. He's an NBA player. So, but probably not your starting center.
Other teams who might want Daniel Tice. The Pacers are answering the phone. They have Miles Turner and Isaiah Jackson and Goga Batadze and Jalen Smith now. They are answering the phone. I promise if you want Daniel Tice, you can basically have him at this point. One more break here, guys, so I can talk to you about BetOnline.net, your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews and news, including this year's NHL playoffs and Major League Baseball, all at BetOnline.net, who are your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting during games, esports, and scores. And they remain the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. They've got all the lines up and ready to go for your favorite sports. If you're an NFL guy, all the week one lines are already up. Those games are in 2 months, and they're already up. If you're a Colts guy, first of all, Locked On Colts is back and running. Second of all, Colts favored by 8.5. In their opening game against the Texans. At BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on those sports and events, including MMA, boxing, golf, and whatever your favorite sport is. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in the action over at BetOnline.net, because BetOnline is where the game starts. Get to the Celtics side of this, John. They got the best player in the trade. That is the headline of the deal. Malcolm Brogdon is a Celtic. What did you think of the value for Boston? Do you have any questions about Mr. Brogdon?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, you dump a bunch of nobodies for... No, I'm only kidding. seriously, though, look, you get Brogdon. For all of the trade buzz around the draft for Brogdon, to come away with him for really only one pseudo rotation player, because Nesmith wasn't in the rotation. For all the promise that I think he has, wasn't in the rotation. None of the other guys were in the rotation. Malik Fitz is an elite celebrator. That's going to be a big loss. But that's about it. Tice basically was unplayable after the first round of the series. So I felt good about the value there. First round pick doesn't really matter. I'm all for trading these picks, especially the way that Brad Stevens is doing it, kind of like 1 year at a time, not going way too far down the road, but like, oh, we're in this draft, we don't care about that. Sure, take the pick, not a big deal. This upcoming draft, sure, take the pick, not a big deal. Obviously, the number one question for me is, how easy is it for you to talk yourself into thinking that Malcolm Brogdon will be healthy this year?
100%. That has been the Malcolm Brogdon question for all of time. And when you look at the Pacers this past season, TJ Warren missed the whole season. See ya. Ricky Rubio missed the whole season. He's out. Malcolm Brogdon misses a bunch of time. See ya. Caris LeVert misses months. See ya. They are done with this injury crap. You know, that's a big motivation for them getting rid of him. But yeah, I played less than 50 games per year with the Pacers over 3 years, which is just a bonkers way to look at it. That team had horrible health luck anyway, but that's why his value was what it was, right? That's why this guy, who is awesome when he plays, like I argued he was the Pacers' best player at times during the most recent era, better than Sabonis when he plays, but he didn't play all the time. That's the big hurdle.
Right. That's the thing. But I feel like bringing him off the bench and giving him 25 to 30 minutes a game versus the workload, especially the workload of being a primary point guard, I think getting him off the ball a bit is a big deal for preserving him. Some stick him in the corners a little bit, let him catch and shoot a little bit more. Marcus Smart, I think, is going to be the point guard, the starting point guard. They're not going to mess with that. So bringing Brogdon in, even if he's hurt, even if he gives you 60 games, I still think that's pretty good. So I feel good about it. And I don't think, what do you think about this? Just the concept of, he's not going to be the starting point guard. He's not going to be involved in all of the actions all the time. And that's a way to preserve his health.
Yeah. You're looking at the Bucks playing for him, right? That's what he was,
right?
Next to Giannis. And there he played 75 games the first year and then 48 and then 64. Like those two of those 3 years are better than all of his Pacers years, right? So theoretically, that sounds great. And then that also merges that he was very successful in that role, right? Toggling between that on-ball guy. And he wanted that. Why? He chose the Pacers to be a point guard more. He might be more effective, at least in a winning environment, being like playing off of a stud. Like him and Tatum, I think, will be really good together. Right. And that's where he will be able to thrive, is as you've described. Right? Coming out of the corner, shooting from deep, off of someone else. Yeah, if he doesn't have to do as much, perhaps that will be better on his body. A lower minutes load definitely will be better on any player's body. So, yes, that is, you know, that's not like a Celtics-colored glasses way of thinking about it. Like, that's legit. I think less minutes and a smaller role could help him, as shown by his games played in Milwaukee and as shown by his effectiveness with that exact same franchise.
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of banking on here. That I think a lot of people in Boston who are, it kind of depends on whether you're in the smart camp or the not smart camp, like as in Marcus Smart, not like intelligent or stupid.
That's where I thought you were going with this.
Yeah, no. The Marcus Smart camp or the non-Marcus Smart camp where, or I mean, it kind of could fall down the same lines, because I think the people who are not Marcus Smart, you know, I think you got to look past some of the things that I think people look at when they are anti-smart. So I think there was some celebration by people that, oh, good, we got Brogdon. He's going to be the starting point guard. Ah, told you that Smart couldn't do it. And it's like, no, Smart's still going to be the starting guy. I think Brogdon in a role off the bench. And I don't know if you got this sense. Do you think, like, him at this point of his career, the step back, like understanding, like, okay, I get it. It didn't take much to get me. It didn't take much to trade for me. My value isn't exactly multiple first round picks. And I'm going to a place where there's a championship potential, but also a bench role. Like, I think there's like a little bit of a, all right, I get it. I'm taking that step back. You think he's like ready to accept that role? Because I think if anything, that might be the biggest obstacle here.
Can I pitch you another idea?
Oh,
from an outsider's perspective, what if the sixth man is Al Horford?
That's been thrown out there. Yeah,
Smart, Brogdon, Brown, Tatum, and Time Lord.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be part of the consideration. I'm
very old as we talk about minutes and role.
Yes. I think there's certainly a discussion to be had there, because I'm very worried about the long-term impact of a deep run like this for Al Horford. Like, he's not going to have as much time to recover. It's just, you know, at 36, just takes longer. So, bringing him off the bench and going with Brogdon in the backcourt and just shifting everybody. So Jalen moves to the three, Jason goes to the four, and Robert Williams is your center. I think that is possible, for sure possible. But then you run the risk of maybe running Malcolm Brogdon into the ground. And I'm not sure that that's where the Celtics want to go, but I think that could be something that works. I think the way we might look at it as Al Horford starts, plays a shorter stint, Danilo Gallinari comes in and spells him there, and then you rely on a Luke Kornet to give you a few minutes here and there during the regular season to be like, all right, these are the Luke Kornet minutes. We're going to try to survive those for 4 minutes at a time. And, you know, deal with it until Robert Williams gets a little extra rest. But yeah, bringing Al Horford off the bench is certainly something that we are going to be watching for.
To answer the question you actually floated at me, yes, I think Brogdon probably realizes what his trade value just was. I mean, especially because, like, you saw the picture he posted with him in front of the banner. Like, I think he knows now, too, what the goal of the team he is on is versus what the goal of the team he was on is. Like, when Tyrese Haliburton got traded to the Pacers, something he said that the biggest difference between the Kings and the Pacers was, and at the time he got traded, those two teams had the exact same record. The Pacers and Kings had the exact same record. he was like, with the Kings, they kept saying like, yeah, we're going to try to make the plan. We're going to keep pushing. And he got to Indiana and they were like, nah, we're not going to make it. We're going with the young guys. Right. So like Brogdon was on that team. That was obviously advertising to their players. Like, we're not going for wins anymore. Whereas the Celtics are like, we would like to win the championship. We think you are the guy to take us from two wins in the finals to four wins in the finals. So that is also, I think, something that will unify him to say, okay, I'll take the whatever role you ask me to do.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's – how old is he now? He's 30.
Turns 30 in December.
Turns 30 in December. Man, it feels like he's 35. so he turns 30. But he's gotten paid. He's on a contract. He's on a long, fairly, 3 years. So he's not trying to make any money right now. I think he understands probably like I'm going to be 33 when this deal is up. So this is like my last big contract. So I think at this point, just going for the wins is probably like, what else is there? What else is there? You can say this year, it doesn't matter what he does this year. If anything, what matters is what he does 2 years from now when he's going into a contract year to try to prove that he still has it. That's something you deal with down the road. So I don't see it as anything besides, hey, buddy, you got your money. You're going to play a prominent role. Maybe you win an award. Maybe you win Sixth Man of the Year. Like, you know, why not? Be the best. You can say, hey, well, you're going to come off the bench and guys take that as a slight. And I understand that, but why not be the best at it? And if the Celtics become a top seed and you say, wow, that bench was really a big deal. Well, there's your sixth man. If he's out there scoring 15 to 20 points a game in 30 minutes and staying healthy, I think people look at it and be like, wow, Brogdon was the missing piece. Just like if you say he's the missing piece, then here's some hardware, buddy, and maybe a ring. Like, what part of this is a bad thing?
No, I don't think there is one. I think it's a good trade for the Celtics. It was a really good fit, and he's a very, very Brad Stevens player, by the way. Like, a textbook smart player, dribbles, passes right away, makes the right reads. Like, Brad Stevens will absolutely love this guy.
Exactly. It's exactly it.
Brad Stevens will love this guy. And he's a good defender, so the Celtics can just rampage on everybody next year on the end of the floor.
Love it.
It's a great fit. I know that this is a Celtics-centered segment, but I'm kind of like, dang, lucky Brogdon. He's in the perfect spot now.
Yeah. I mean, I think this really is I think this is a home run. Like, Brad Stevens. Yeah, look, let's turn it to Indiana. How about Indiana's Brad Stevens just hitting home runs for the Celtics?
Not coaching IU basketball, so
I know. Boy, that was a fun 5 minutes. I think he's obviously a tremendous coach, but like, I think he's really enjoying this gig, and I think he's killing it. He's made some great moves, and the moves that haven't been great, he immediately corrected those. So he's doing great. Like, this is I love what the Celtics did, and it's a commitment to this starting five, and it's a commitment to winning a championship with these guys. And I like that, you know, Brogdon gets to be one of the guys that's, hey, you know, it's a good feeling. I think it's a good feeling for a player. Like, I know we just spent this time, like, can you adjust? Can you do this all? But I got to tell you, like, if somebody gave you a call and said, hey, it's not exactly the way we thought, you know, you might've thought it was going to go, but also you're the guy, you're the missing piece. You're the part, you're the, you know, my Simpsons references, you're the flame to the flaming Mo. Like, you're what makes this good. Like, we didn't win a championship. We think with you, we will. Like, that is like a hell of an ego boost. Like, that's a great spot to be in.
I agree. I'm psyched for him. And I think both teams win, despite this not being the value many thought. I think that the reason for that is the Pacers are taking a big bet on Aaron Nesmith. That's what I think. And Brogdon's, I mean, this is always like, to close, people always say like, that's all they got. I'm like, do you think they got a better offer? And they're like, nah, we're taking this worse one instead. You know, like,
Minnesota offered us three unprotected first, but we're like, nope, we got to get that Daniel Tice. Yeah,
that's always the part. Like, if I knew every trade offer they got for Brogdon, then yeah, I'm allowed to criticize what they did, but I have no idea. Like, I can only go off of what they did. So I think they're betting on Nesmith, but I like this trade. for both teams for where they're headed. Do you have any closing thoughts here? Or are we good to wrap up?
No, I'm all out of thoughts for today.
If you want to hear more about the defending champion or Easter Conference champion, Boston Celtics, yeah, John, where can people find your podcast?
Well, that podcast will be done on June 18th, 2023.
I don't know why I said that. That was incorrect.
No. I'm appreciative of that Freudian slip. You follow me on Twitter at John_Corrales. Shows on YouTube. Locked On Celtics is on YouTube. Everywhere your podcasts. Everywhere you get podcasts, like the fine Locked On Pacers podcast. A wonderful job by Tony. Wherever you get that podcast, this podcast exists too. Whenever you want to talk Celtics.
And if you ever want to hear more about the Pacers, Locked On Pacers is the way to go. Free and available on all platforms, as it Locked On Celtics is, and YouTube, where you can see me try to figure out why my one piece of sweaty hair is sticking to my forehead the entire time me and John are talking. Everybody, thank you and Todd for listening to your respective shows. We'll both be back tomorrow. Until then, take care.